time. And that case is 132313, Widmore v. Sun Chemical Corporation. And it's good afternoon, Ms. Major.
I was ready for that. May it please the Court. Good afternoon. My name is Ruth Major, and I represent the appellant, George Widmore.
I should thank all of you for sitting through this morning.
It just shows how hard you all work, I'll say that. It's a lot of information coming at you.
So, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. The two issues before this court on a very high level is, one, whether or not the court properly dismissed Mr. Widmore's age discrimination claim under the federal statute, Age Discrimination Employment Act, and secondly, whether the district court erred when it dismissed the defamation claim against Charles Ramsey and the defendant corporation. Those are the two overriding issues before this court. My client, Mr. Widmore, was a plant manager for a company called Reicoline, which is located here in Chicago on the northwest side of the city. He was plant manager for 16 years, and at the time he was terminated, he was actually overseeing two plants, the Chicago plant where he was situated and a plant in California as well. The plant made products that are used in the printing industry and sold to printers. My client's responsibility as plant manager, his responsibility was to oversee the actual manufacture of the product. There were other departments that he worked with but that he did not control that had other responsibilities, such as the purchasing department, which was responsible for purchasing the materials that were used in the product, the lab, which was a laboratory which was responsible for coming up with what they call the recipes for the products and giving those recipes to the other staff, including the plant manager. And there's another work unit that's actually involved in the case that wasn't even part of Reicoline. It was a corporate department, and that department was actually called the SAP implementation team, and that was an IT department that was actually situated in Northlake. It wasn't even, you know, at the Chicago plant. It was an IT group.
Now, the defendant is claiming that Mr. Widmore created sham issues of fact by contradicting his own deposition, particularly in the case of job duties, how they were reassigned. How would you respond to that?
Well, two ways, as we explained in our, I think, pretty detailed in our reply brief. One is they've misquoted what's in the deposition transcript, and we actually put the an extract from the deposition transcript in our brief. He was shown this sort of job description that had been prepared earlier on for him, and the job he wasn't asked, are these percentages correct? He was asked, are the job descriptions, what's in there, you know, the substance of his responsibilities, are they correct? Never asked about the percentages. Moreover, the percentages don't contradict what he testified to. What he testified to as his job responsibilities line up with what's in that attachment. It's just different words are used in different descriptions. But when you take out the information, it's the same as what he put in his declaration. There is no dispute. Where they say he made a denial, the denial was there was language to the effect, and again, this is in our reply too, as to whether or not his primary responsibility was to manage. It was something to that effect. And he denied that because although he was the plant manager, a lot of the work he did was actually dealing with inventory issues and lots of other things that didn't actually involve the management of people. So that was his response there. If you look carefully at the transcript and you look at his declaration, it's a manufactured conflict, like unfortunately a lot of the supposed evidence that was presented by the defendant.
Speaking of evidence, what is the single best evidence that the motivation for the termination was age and not something like a personality conflict, you know, headbutting, personal dislike?
Well, Your Honor, it's difficult. I'm sorry, it's difficult for me to come up with what the actual best one was offhand, because this is a case that is really built on many, many statements that were made about him that were not true. I think in the brief they talk about defendant talks about these huge losses that the company had due to product quality, and then has a sentence that sort of makes a statement about Mr. Widmar's performance, and the evidence has been unequivocal in this case that there were no quality problems, none, that were attributed to any conduct, any performance issues of my client. So I think probably, if I had to pick the biggest, it would be to attribute millions of dollars in losses in their brief and to try to artfully tie it in to some performance issue of my client.
The best evidence of age discrimination is an argument in a brief. Counsel, you know, we've said, I don't know how many times, that in these cases, our role is not to second-guess personnel and management decisions.
Right.
So let me try to ask the same question again. What's the best evidence that the decision to fire Mr. Widmar was based upon his age?
Kate, Your Honor, I guess there's three main types of evidence that we believe show that this isn't a mistake or an error in judgment, that these statements made about Mr. Widmar were out-and-out lies. One was that statements that were made that Mr. Widmar was not, that Mr. Widmar had made errors in connection with products that were being sold. When we have evidence, we presented evidence that showed that it was not anything that he did. It was the fault of other departments, and that his supervisor knew it. Okay, that his supervisor knew.
I thought his supervisor expected him to fix these things.
Well, Your Honor, I guess I was kind of going to get into this. There's different departments at the company that have different areas of responsibility. Mr. Widmar's responsibility was to oversee the manufacturing, but it's been known for all 16 years, and it was known at all time that Mr. Widmar worked there, that, for example, the list of which products should be mixed, that's an example, that's prepared by the lab, and it has always been the case that Mr. Widmar's department was to follow the directives from the lab as to what should be mixed. Mr. Roberts presented no evidence that he'd ever given a directive that anything different should be done. There was no documentary evidence of anybody saying, don't follow the lab anymore, we're going to start following just what the manufacturer says. And Mr. Widmar presented evidence that what he did was what they always did. It's the way Reichline always operated. And Mr. Roberts knew that because he worked there for almost an entire year before he terminated Mr. Widmar's employment. Nevertheless, without any documentation to support what he's saying, in complete contradiction to how the company had operated for 16 years, he said that Mr. Widmar, following the directives from the lab, was an error. And then what they did was actually had the lab prepare another list of what needed to be mixed. So they said that he shouldn't have followed it, despite the fact that it had always been done, with no basis to say that. And then they went forward again and prepared a list for manufacturing to use. That was the process that was always used. Mr. Roberts knew it. He knew that Mr. Widmar was not doing anything wrong when he followed that list. He was blamed for problems with the coatings when it turned out that there were no problems with the coatings. The problem with the coatings was that the purchasing had purchased the wrong testing material. And they came up with false information that there was a problem. There was never a problem. And Mr. Roberts knew that, and Reichelein knew that, despite the fact that they knew, and this came out in their depositions, that there were no actual problems with the product. that it was purchasing, that it had purchased the wrong materials to test. In the EEOC statement, Reicheline represented, made a statement to the effect that Mr. Widmar had bought a mixer that didn't correct the damage that had been caused. And they knew there was no damage. There had been no damage caused.
We just save some time if
okay.
you want.
Your Honor, we went through, with regard to the defamation, there was no argument before the lower court that that the defamation claim was untimely. And but we've addressed the other issues in our brief, too.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Ms. Bentley, good morning. Good afternoon. Mm-hmm.
May it please the court and counsel, Susan Benton, Winston & Strawn, on behalf of the two remaining defendants, Sun Chemical Corporation and Charles Ramsey. I think it's best to get right into Mr. Widmar's admissions as to his poor performance. And as a prelude to that, the context in which Mr. Roberts was experiencing Mr. Widmar's performance. So Sun Chemical acquired Reicheline in 2004. Mr. Roberts was appointed in 2008 to oversee the Reicheline operation because it was in trouble. So Reicheline is in trouble. Keith Roberts is sent in to fix. George Widmar begins reporting to Keith Roberts in November 2008.
And so what would be, if you know, what would be the date of the earliest email that you have, because you cited a number of emails.
Right.
And what I'm wondering is how close it was to the termination.
The first emails that, I think there's an email in September that we cite with regard to communication issues, but the focused litany of emails, if you will, starts in October. I think by that time, Keith Roberts had reached his limit with Mr. Widmar, and Mr. Widmar seemed to be pushing back. I mean, this is just my opinion, looking at the tone of the emails going back and forth. The October emails are particularly troubling, I think, for Mr. Widmar. Now, Mr. Widmar did admit that beginning in the fall of 2009, he was repeatedly criticized by Keith Roberts. I can go through some of those, but I think the primary message that Keith was sending to George Widmar was, stop the finger pointing, stop telling me it's not your fault, and fix the problems. Here's a quote. Is it even possible that instead of pointing out faults in emails, we get an answer and reply with the correct information? My concern is that there's no question related to anything that is done as long as there is some way to say, I'm doing what I am told. If someone says, go ahead and just make an adjustment, meaning in a formula, does that take responsibility away from manufacturing of providing the right thing? This is all Keith is getting back. And then toward the end of really that period, October, November, there were two serious incidents. One, Mr. Widmar sent out materials that should have been quarantined and he had been repeatedly told they needed to be quarantined. Yes, there had been a formula change, but in the mid-summer of 2009, that formula change was reversed. Manufacturing was told, quarantine that product, we don't want it going out, it's not working. Mr. Widmar continued to send out that product. And then finally, they say it was the straw that broke the camel's back, was what we've been referring to as the forklift incident. And Ms. Major just addressed that incident, not directly, but essentially when she talked about failures in purchasing, failures in the lab. Because of a faulty Lunetta card that measured a coating product and said, the product has issues, the lab began investigating how the product was made. And part of that investigation revealed that a raw material, an ingredient, MGS 1122, was not being premixed before it was put into the formula.
You know, something that is worrisome is that reading the briefs, there just seemed to be page after page of factual disputes. The defendant maintains that there are no legitimate material disputes of fact.
Yeah, Your Honor, I'd love to address that. We based our arguments on admissions by Mr. Widmar. Some of those admissions from his deposition he contradicted in his declaration. And therein are the sites that plaintiff argues, or here the appellant argues, are factual disputes. These are not factual disputes. Mr. Widmar absolutely admitted, let's take the forklift, that he had his staff, instead of mixing, the manufacturing staff in the plant, jiggle the material with a forklift. Entirely inappropriate, anyone's evaluation, entirely inappropriate, to the point where Mr. Widmar first said, I didn't even know it needed to be mixed, and then later said, well, the agitating always worked. He admitted that the manufacturer's instructions sitting in the plant said the material must be premixed. He admitted that. He put together a list then of all the raw materials in the plant that should be premixed that were not. He's the manufacturing manager. He sees these deliveries of raw materials. He should know. And that's what Keith Roberts ultimately concluded. Who is going to know this except the manufacturing manager?
Counsel, I assume you don't want us to decide whether it was a good idea to fire Mr. Widmar.
No, we do not.
That's what most of these factual disputes seem to address.
Whether you agree or not with Keith Roberts' decision. Right. Right. That's not the function of this court, nor was it the function of the district court.
You know, there was a problem in the district court's maintaining or seeming to dismiss Widmar's self-serving affidavit, because time and time again in the circuit we have tried to make clear that almost all affidavits are self-serving and that that is not a legitimate reason to dismiss them, or unhelpful, or an illegitimate form of evidence. Is it a contested fact as to which employees assumed his duties after he was fired?
Absolutely not.
No.
It is not. And I'll give you a key admission by Mr. Widmar. He admitted in his deposition and has not addressed at all in his briefing that all of the employees who reported to him at the time of his termination, following his termination, reported to Ed Toliopoulos, who's older than Mr. Widmar, except one, Ivan Roa, who reported to Ralph Zarata, also older than Mr. Widmar, who replaced Mr. Widmar in the quality functions of his managerial position. Ed Toliopoulos replaced Mr. Widmar in the manufacturing managerial functions of his position. Mr. Widmar admits that. He can't dispute it. So his response is to come up, frankly, with a concocted theory that he wasn't a manager at all, that instead he performed ministerial functions similar to those performed by Jose Sanchez, T-codes, inputting information into the computer, or that he performed the functions of a working foreperson under the union contract. He supervised those people. Mr. Ruiz said that his duties did not change after Mr. Widmar left. Mr. Widmar was not present at the plant to know how duties changed. And frankly, Mr. Toliopoulos was free to delegate tasks as he saw fit. But Mr. Toliopoulos assumed all managerial accountability except for the quality function. So no, it is not in dispute as a matter of fact who replaced Mr. Widmar. And a key issue here is Mr. Widmar was a plant manager, a manufacturing manager, responsible for two plants, by the way, as Ms. Major pointed out. Jose Sanchez, Angel Ruiz, in no way charge of one plant, much less two. Mr. Widmar criticized for performance deficiencies by his boss, right? No other plant manager reporting to Keith Roberts showed performance deficiencies, were disciplined or criticized for those performance deficiencies. They didn't show them, so they weren't criticized for them. He can point to no similarly situated individual within Keith Roberts' responsibility who was treated more favorably. He can point to none. Now, particularly, he can't point to anyone who's substantially younger than him. To the extent he suggests, as we hear repeatedly, it was the lab's fault. His wife, Mary Redmond, ran the lab, did not report to Keith Roberts. To the extent he says it was purchasing's problem. Ed Toliopoulos is older than Mr. Widmar, not a substantially younger person who was treated more favorably. So he presents absolutely no evidence on the similarly situated prong, and therefore I think there's an issue with the district court opinion because it reached pretext. There's no basis to reach pretext here. There was a failure to meet Keith Roberts' legitimate performance expectations and a failure to identify any similarly situated, substantially younger individual who received more favorable treatment or who replaced him. So at that point, the age analysis should have ended, and my time is out, or I would address the defamation.
Yes. Did you want to add?
Just on the defamation, the defamation claim before you is a claim that is entirely waived, never raised to the district court as a matter of law. It was waived because it was not raised there. In addition, it's not a pro se defamatory statement, subject to an innocent construction opinion. It is not the basis for a defamation comment.
So the district court never heard the comment or saw the comment. Widmar screwed things up for the company.
The district court did see the comment. It was cited by Mr. Widmar as support for his allegation of defamation, which was that Charles Ramsey told Vicky DiDomenico that Mr. Widmar intentionally sabotaged Sun Chemical. Ms. DiDomenico said, no, he did not say that. What he said around the time of his termination was that George Widmar made a change that screwed things up for the company. Judge Leinenweber then saw that comment cited by Mr. Widmar as support for the sabotage claim and concluded that doesn't support the sabotage claim. You have no support for the sabotage claim. Therefore, your defamation claim fails.
Thank you.
Thank you.
How much time? We're going to give her another 2 minutes, please.
Thank you. Just briefly, in the brief, we identify for each claim that they say where my client did something wrong, we provide testimony from my client as to the facts, we provide testimony from other witnesses as to the facts, and we provide documentary evidence that shows that those statements that he did something wrong were not true, or it shows that the claims of problems were not there, that there were no problems, or at best it's something that a jury can decide who's right about whether something was a problem or not. But we've presented evidence on every single point, and it's in our briefs. They were untruthful statements that were made about my client's performance, and my client has been steadfast. He did this job for 16 years. There's also no evidence of him having problems before they came on board. It was hearsay statements that Mr. Roberts came to fix things up, and all they tried to do when they came on board was cut costs. They didn't try to improve quality. With regard to admissions, it's absolutely untrue. My client did not make admissions that he had problems in his performance, and you have to look at the evidence. And we've identified in the record where all the evidence is, and if you look at the reply and if you look at our brief, we point to all the documents that refute. Ms. Benton just went through a list of statements by Mr. Roberts as to, is there a problem, is there, why can't anybody take blame? We identify those statements weren't even made to my client. They were made to other people who sent emails. And they use all that to try to say that's a reflection on my client. The evidence has to be looked at because we put everything in there and we cited to the record so the court could see that this is not a case. This is like the Mullen case that this court ruled on within the last 2 months, where there's a lot of things said, but there's no evidence to support the complaints. And it's for a jury to decide, was it because of age or not? With regard to defamation, there was absolutely no waiver. We addressed that statement with the court. Specifically, that we cited to Ms. DiDomenico's testimony and said that statement supports defamation. Even if you don't take the statement that he heard, that he believed he heard, her own testimony supports it. All the arguments counsel makes now about statute of limitations and whether it's opinion and all that, none of that was raised by the defendant in the lower court. All of that's been waived. And this statement was before the court, and it was pulled out in discovery, and it supports his case. And the defamation should not have been dismissed either.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks to both of you, and the case will be taken under advisement. Thank you. We are actually